So, I'm going to start. Notes here. One of the comments I made, I do acknowledge that God speaks the truth, and that it says the truth will set you free. And I do acknowledge that He reveals the truth and also hides the truth from. He reveals the truth to His saints, to those that are His, and He hides the truth from those who are His enemies. He does have the capacity to be able to read minds and people's hearts, and that gives Him a great ability to be able to answer questions that people might have in such a way that it reveals. It's like Mysterion truth. We know that we as body members, that we know and understand and appreciate what Christ has done as our head. And so the first question that I'm asking this morning, or this evening, is this one about why did God create? So I want to go to John chapter 1. And it's another thing that's been on my mind. I finished submitting my article on John. We're clear up to, I think it's chapter 18 now, but just the idea of all the information that's available to us as we open up this book. So let's start reading in John 1, and we're going to read down to 14. It says in and it's got the word "the" in there, but we can leave that out. And just say, in beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. An awful lot could be said about what he just says, in beginning was the Word. I think it's his ability to be able to create or to communicate with those he wants to communicate with. With the Word. He says the same was in beginning with God. Now what I see here in the first verse is that there's three persons, and God the Father is invisible. And so one of the things to make him known is that he wants to become visible, but rather than doing it as the Father, he's going to be doing it as the Son. So he says the same was in the beginning with God. And so he is has that ability as the Holy Spirit as the third part of the Godhead. He's able to create and do things for God. He goes on to say, all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. So that's quite another one of those statements. It's, it sounds like that'd be not too big a deal, but if you start thinking about everything that he has created, and he's still a creator, he's still creating, that it is a big deal, and he wants credit for that. The world seems like that they don't want to give him any credit for that. They don't even want to acknowledge that he exists. He says, in him, in verse 4, was life, and the life was the light of men. This light here is more enlightenment than it is just like the sun coming up. It's an enlightenment. It helps us to be able to know God. And we can know one another through the Spirit that dwells within us. In verse 5 it says, and the light shineth into darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Our current understanding is the reason it's dark is because they rejected the light. And they don't want anything to do with the light. It says because their deeds were evil. So as a result, they chose the darkness. He would rather that they accept him and that they would begin to understand him and have knowledge of him and again give him credit for who he is and what he is. You know, another thing is just not getting to know him, but knowing his heart, knowing his mind, knowing his desires, and knowing how he thinks about things is one of the things we're going to be getting into is the Ten Commandments. And one of the things they talk about in the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not kill, or actually it should be thou shalt not murder. But we know that God, from time to time, would judge man because their deeds were evil. And he chose out the nation Israel. And as a result, all the rest of the world, all the rest of the people became part of the nations. And so he favored Israel. And at the very same time, when he was revealing truth to them, he was hiding it from some of the Gentiles. The Gentiles were going to be able to receive knowledge of him, but they had to go through Israel. So that was a different way or a different method in which he chose to reveal his plan. He says the same came for a witness. So this is talking about verse 6. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. We believe that was John the Baptist. It says, with the same came for a witness to bear witness of the light. That's another thing that the Lord does. He uses witnesses to establish the truth. And I can remember a verse that says, when two or three are gathered among them, he's there. And he's a witness. And he likes that. That's that method that he uses and has been using from the beginning, having witnesses, seems to be what he thinks gives him validity or gives him an opportunity for others to understand him. Because if man can understand him, then man can share that with other men, and men can receive and get to know the truth. So John the Baptist says he was not the light, but he was sent to bear witness of that light. And so that was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world, or enlightens every man that cometh into the world. Now, I think he attempts to enlighten every person, but I think those that wish, have a choice, wish to, they can reject him. They can make that choice to do that. And the world often does. And he says, he was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not, and I'm just going to add, by choice. They would not believe because they would not. It says he came into his own, and I think this is mankind in general, and his own received him not. And we know there are a few that did acknowledge, but as a rule, his own rejected him. And so they didn't want any part and partial of him. So he says, not but as many as received him, and this is important that we understand this, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. So we know that this is not unusual for God to share his power with his saints and to use them as servants and as sons to be able to further his ability to get others to know and understand him. This is important in 13, where it says, which are born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. So we know that that's very true of Christ, that he impregnated Mary, and that he did it willingly. He became that fertilized seed, and he became flesh, but he didn't do it as a human might do it, but rather did it as God the Father did it. So that was the way we were trying to explain this to a four-year-old, how this was not a normal birth. It was not a situation that has ever happened again since. It is this the Son of God actually is also the Son of Man, which makes him very, very unique. But he doesn't have the sin curse on him. He does not sin. He's not a sinner. Therefore, he can die for us. And he can be God. He is God, and he's perfect in every way. He says in verse 14, "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." That is exactly what the Lord wanted to do with this. That's why he created. This is his plan, to reveal himself to man. Of all his creation, we're going to be looking at this a little bit later, but we were created, he created us in God's image. So that makes us very, very unique in the sense that, he created man and had the, I think the importance, of the man in view. Now let's go back to, book of Genesis. I've got all 31 verses there. I'm not sure I'm going to read them all, but it starts out almost the same way as it did in John, where it says, "In beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void." Ronnie has showed us some pictures sometimes of the stars and the vastness of the universe. And it's not hard to imagine that that somebody put those things, put the stars and the moon, the sun, and all those things in place for a reason. And when God began to create, that's what he did. He created this universe for himself and for us to enjoy. And if you think about it, really all he really wants is to be thanked and appreciated for what he's done. He says it was empty, it was without form and void or empty, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. Now this light here is explained as being, the things like the sun, so we can see, and things grow. And also the moon. He says, God saw the light, whether it was good. God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and he called the darkness night. In the evening and the morning were the first day. Again, there was a lot, that happened. But it's explained in just a very few words. It's a lot of times the way sometimes people explain things, where they make a simple sentence, and when we try to turn that into a task, it becomes very, very complicated and takes a great deal of time. And so this is an ongoing thing, know, this is just beginning, but there's going to be a lot of details that will follow. So verse 6 says, "And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, let it divide the waters from the waters." So what we know from that is, you know, we have oceans and we have seas, and I think I want to say the earth is about two-thirds water, and about a third of it is land. And he goes on to say in 7, "And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so." So that's the atmosphere that's above the earth, and he did that, as we're going to see here on the second day. It says, "And God called the firmament of heaven in the evening and the morning of the second day. And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so." So, you know, basically when you think about it, you get mountains and you get places that are higher, and there's only so much water on the earth. So the dry land appears where it's can extend above the water. He says, "And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together the waters he called the seas, and God saw that it was good." Every, you know, you think about it, everything God does in his creation is good. And it's like he is looking back on it and satisfied with what he's done. And it says, "And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so." Verse 12, "And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind." And this is another thing that God does. He creates these different things, and they're different. They grow differently. They serve different purposes. And he says, "The tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind, and God saw that that was good." I just think that this creates order, and also, you know, we know some food isn't good for us, and other food is, and so these things are, there might, some other creature might be able to eat these things and not get sick, but if we eat them, we're going to get sick. So he makes a division in between that. He says, "In the evening and the morning were the third day. God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years." So that's basically, you know, what the stars and the rest of the those things that are far above us, that's why they're there. 15 says, "And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also." So, you know, you got the sun there, you got the moon, you got the other planets, really, the ones that are close. And then the stars, which are far away, but they're visible, and they give off light. It says, "And God said in 17, set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good." I don't know if you've ever had to work a night shift, midnight to 8, but you have to sleep in the daytime. It's a little harder than it is to sleep at night. And so, but the world we live in, with the lighting and things that we have, we are able to do that, to do our work at a different time of the day. I just think it's interesting that he, when he originally created it, it was like that, where you would be awake in the daytime and then sleeping at night. So he says, "The evening and morning were the fourth day. God said, let the water bring forth abundantly the moving creature that has life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind, and God saw that that was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the water in the seas, and let fowl multiply in the earth in the evening and the morning with the fifth day. Now this is going to be interesting. He says, and God said, let the earth bring forth a living creature after his kind, cattle, creeping things, and the beasts of the earth in his kind, and the cell. God made the beast of the earth after his kind, the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the earth after his kind, and God saw it was good. Then we get to us, in verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and every creepeth thing that creepeth on the earth. We think the reason he did this on the sixth day is so man couldn't say he had any part in the creation. He hadn't been created. So he's the last one to be created. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. That kind of answers one of those questions that people are confused about today, about what they are. And I think it's very clear there that God created male and female after his kind, you know, after his image. So God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and everything that moveth on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed to you, it shall be for meat. He makes that statement, but we know that that changes, and he tells them there's one tree they can't partake of. He says in verse 30, to every beast of the earth, to every fowl of the air, to everything that creepeth on the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat, and it was so. So in other words, he's given man everything he needs to survive, and he's putting him over all the animal kingdom, and the fish and birds, and man can use those things for food, plus these vegetables here. God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. In the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So we've just taken a few minutes there to read how everything was created. Again, we can use a little bit of our imagination. But basically, he's explained everything that we really need to know, and really given us an inkling of who was the who was going to be residing and living on the earth, which was mankind. We go to Genesis 2:7. And it says, and the Lord God formed man out of the dust of the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils, and the breath of life, and man became a living soul. That is how we came into existence initially with Adam, and then we know that later on Adam, they took a rib out of Adam's side and made the woman. But these are very clear things You can't, if you separate the body from the breath, there's no more man. And so it's very important that we realize it's a combination. Because this living soul is a combination of a body and a spirit. And one doesn't exist without the other. So it's, again, it seems like we're trying to have to explain some of these things that before weren't necessary. Let's go back to Genesis 1 and verse 26. God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea. I think I did read that already. And over the earth and every creeping thing. So that dominion is another thing that the Lord wanted us to have. And again in 27, so God created man in his own image, and the image of God created him, male and female created he them. So that's a reproduction. Then let's go to the New Testament, 2 Corinthians 3:18. And we all, with open face, beholding as in a glass the glory of the Lord, are changed into the same image from glory to glory, even as by the Spirit of the Lord. This is not going to be, we're all going to go to have a resurrection. We're not necessarily all going to be resurrected to the earth. But there is this thing about allowing us to kind of have a little bit of insight into the Lord from the standpoint of how much He thinks about us. It's the same image from glory to glory, even as the Spirit of the Lord. Let's go to 2 Corinthians. I was just looking at the image factor, and that how much the Lord thinks about us. It doesn't mean we should be proud and boastful, but it does mean that we can appreciate how much He loves us, how much His plans surround us. He says in verse 4, in whom God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not. That was the other side of this thing about when you think about God and think about what He does, we need to realize that He has those that are His, that believe in Him, that He wants to get to know. He wants us to get to know Him. And at the same time, there's others that don't want to get to know Him. And He has a plan for them also. It's just called death. They don't want to know Him. They don't want to have anything to do with Him. He gives them a choice. They make the choice. He says, whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. I suppose this may be confusing to non-believers if they think about a loving God being this way, but in reality, He has given all a chance. He's given all a choice. And some make the right choice, and some choose not to. Now let's go to Colossians. But the beauty of it is, when you do it that way and give them a choice, it's fair, it's just, it's good. Colossians chapter 3. Let's see, I needed verse 1 first. Chapter 1, verse 15. 1:15. in Colossians. It says, this is, let's read 14 first. It says, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature. For by him were all things created. There are things in heaven, things in earth, visible, invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions, principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. So all those things we read in Genesis, that first chapter, are concluded here just in a verse or two. But the idea is that he holds everything together. It's the Spirit that does that work. And he does it not only for our benefit, but for his. Let's go to chapter 3 now. He says, I'm going to read 9. Lie not one to another, seeing that you put off the old man with his deeds, in verse 10, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. Then he goes on to say there's neither Greek or Jew, and circumcision or uncircumcision. Those, that's not as important for my lesson tonight, is just to think that we're part of the new man, that he's renewed our mind. We think differently now than what we used to. Let's go to Hebrews. And I wanted to read the first 10 verses there. He says, God, who at sundry times and in different manners spake in time past and to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, or it could be in Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, which he had by himself purged our sins, set down at the right hand of the majesty on hand. So he goes on to say, being made so much better than the angels. We know people kind of glorify angels and think we have guardian angels. But in our dispensation, we actually have the Lord watching over us and not the angels. He says, he has by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they, for unto which the angels said, he at any time, thou art my son, this day I have begotten thee. In other words, did he ever say to one of the angels, you're my son? And the answer is no. He says, and again, I will be to him a father, and he shall be a son. So part of the Godhead is the Father, and in order to be the Father, he needed to become the Son, and be manifested in that way. And again, when he bringeth the first begotten into the world, he saith, let all the angels of God worship him. And of the angels, he saith, who maketh his angel spirits and his ministers a flame of fire? But unto the Son, he saith, thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of righteousness is a scepter of thy kingdom. You know, when we get into our last 7 books that Paul wrote, we have a position in the heavenlies far above all heaven with him, and we will be there as his body, serving him and dwelling there. It says in verse 9, thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore God, even thy God, has anointed thee with the oil of gladness among the above thy fellows. I just, you know, want to say again that the Lord loves righteousness, but he also hates iniquity. And we do have this comparison all the time with the people that do well, do right, and people that don't. They lie and want to destroy. He says in verse 10, "And thou, Lord, in the beginning hast laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the works of thy hands." Then let's go to Hebrews chapter 10. Several verse there I want to read. Verse 1 says, "For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never, with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually, make the comers thereof perfect." I think that is an amazing plan that he had to satisfy the sin question. The wages of sin is death. And the fact that he, the only one really qualified to do that, to die for us and to assure us a resurrection in his presence. And he did it. That was his plan. Let's go to, let's see. Well, I got some other verses, but I'm not going to read them. I'll give you the verses. You can write them down or you can just mention them there. Revelations 13, verses 14 and 15. And then Revelations 14, 9 through 11. Some of these speak about the beast, the image of the beast. And some of these refer to him, to Christ, the King, Lord of Lords. And then Revelations 20, verse 4, it's for those who didn't receive the mark of the beast, they are going to be resurrected and dwell with the Lord in his kingdom on the earth for 1,000 years. And then, I'm not going to read this just because of the time, but I did think about the Ten Commandments, and they're in Exodus chapter 20, verses 11. Chapter 20, verses 3 to 11 have to do with God, you know, how we're supposed to put him first, don't have any other gods before him, and so on. And then when you get over to verses 12 to 17, it has to do, the law had to do more with how we treated one another. And the one verse that kind of caught my attention tonight was the one he says, "Thou shalt not kill," which really means thou shalt not murder. But it has the idea of how you treat, other people. And we know that, in wars, sometimes people end up killing other people, but I don't think it's necessarily considered murder if they're doing it for the right reasons, for maybe it's just a fact of allowing people to continue to worship God and to live in peace and to be able to praise him. So I'm going to just say a quick prayer. I trust that this was, even though it was, seemed pretty basic, it still seems to me like with the world we're in right now, we need to remind ourselves, and we need to have an argument for these people to come up with all these crazy ideas of trying to figure out who we are and why we exist. Lord, we thank you for your word, and we thank you for having the understanding that we have. We constantly want to know more. We constantly want to learn more. We constantly want to be more like you and think like you. We'd ask that you would guide our hearts and minds and help us to rejoice and be thankful. for all that you do and for how much you love and care about us. We'd ask, Lord, you continue to guide and direct in each one of our lives, and would ask that you continue to bless us in any way that that you see fit, and that we might be approved workmen unto God, rightly dividing the word of truth. With that, I'm going to close.